You're listening to Hearth Casual, the Hearthstone podcast for tavern brawlers, dungeon runners, and everyone else enjoying the game off the ranked ladder.
Well met, Arch Magi and Arch Villains, and welcome to episode 33 of Hearth Casual. I am Heist Baron Brian Black, and with me, as always, resident dad legend of the show and new Azeroth Bell Ringer of the Year, Mr. Kevin Ellis. How are you, Kevin?
Sound the bells, Brian. I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. I just managed to finish normal mode of the Dalaran heist about an hour before we started recording tonight. I was hoping to somehow have heroic chapter 5 completed by the time we started doing the show, but normal chapter 5, a little more challenging than I thought it would be I was able to cheat really hard.
Well, of course. Yeah, it is a bit long, that's for sure, but that's kind of the beauty of it, right? It's the final run.
It is the ultimate dungeon run, and just the normal version of the run being 12 bosses is pretty freaking crazy, and there's some twists at the end. Some of those final bosses are pretty wild, and we'll definitely be getting to some talk about that, and also talking about what our favorite treasures and passives are in the heist. I think this is going to be a very heist-centric episode in that regard, because we didn't talk too much last episode about the heist, but now that it's been a few weeks, Chapter 5 is out, we'd like to tell you what we're using, and maybe that'll help you on your runs.
And honestly, I think that's the way to approach the heist, too, is it's like, we can't give you specifically boss-by-boss tips all the time, although we might try to throw in some anecdotally. But sure. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, to me, it's what do you get offered in terms of treasures and passives, and how do you synergize them to just do crazy broken things? So,
yeah, and how nice is Bob to you? Because, I mean,
oh, Bob's really nice to me on this run.
clearly.
As we kind of alluded to at the beginning of the show, I have not finished the fifth wing yet, only because, I mean, it just came out today, but I'm on the ninth boss of it, but I get this weird feeling that I'm going to be okay. Like, I think I'm going to do
it. I mean, if you can have a turn to kill on the ninth boss of the run, I'm sure you can have a turn to kill on the 12th boss of the run.
Really? Any of them? Yeah. Except maybe the one that gives you a timer, but whatever.
you ran into that one. I did. That
She's
one surprised
up next,
me,
actually.
Too.
She's up next, so we'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm.
That one's annoying.
It's almost like a real game of Hearthstone.
Oh, no, it's worse.
Oh, yeah,
way worse. Because it is a deck designed to abuse the fact that you only have 25 seconds.
Oh, okay, interesting.
You're playing against a secret deck, and all the time that it takes for secrets to trigger eats up your time.
That's awful. Okay, good. That's brilliant, actually.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, as far as what we have been playing, you know, on most episodes, I'd be talking about some sort of weird, crazy deck that I put together and tell you all about it. Of course, last episode talked about Beast Heal Rogue. This week, I don't have any deck to tell you about because I've just been playing nothing but heist, this week's Tavern Brawl, which we'll get to in a second, and more heist runs. I am those crowns, Kevin. And now, mind you, the past few days, the client had been bugged, and it wasn't too easy to tell which characters I had actually completed on or not. But I need full completion. I need to have a heroic crown on each class for each chapter of the run. I'm about a third of the way there. I think
that's pretty good.
Yeah, I have about 16 out of 45 runs done. Of course, the hardest runs, chapters like 3, 4, and 5, don't have too many complete there. Most of my completes are in the first two chapters.
Well, you've had more time on them too. Sure. So yeah, that makes sense. I'm with you on that. I definitely want the same. I'm way further behind than you. I've only got 2 out of 45, but it is wings 1 and 4 that I've completed on heroic. So that's good. I'm kind of a mage burning wit kind of guy, I've come to find.
It's such a good hero power, especially if you get stargazing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. So no, it's a good time though. And I do see myself taking up the same. I mean, really wanting to go full completion. Now the question is, Brian, obviously you're pushing full completion in heroic, but do you see a world in which you go back and do it on normal as well, just so that you got all the grounds? Or what's your thoughts on that?
No. Unless there was an incentive. If they had any additional rewards for doing full completion on normal and full completion on heroic, then I might do that. And I actually feel it's a missed opportunity to not have, you know, even if it's a small reward, like, you know, for completing the entire heist on normal, you get a Golden Classic pack. I don't think it would be too outrageous to offer a second Golden Classic pack for completing all of the runs on all classes on normal. That's a lot of time put into it.
And then again on heroic, perhaps.
Sure.
Just something at the end there.
Oh, but the heroic, okay. Heroic all class, all chapter completion should give you a Golden Classic pack with a guaranteed Golden Legendary for that much effort.
Yeah, that's true. I think it should give you all of the characters in Dalaran Heist to play as heroes.
Well, yeah, we talked about that too. Yeah, I'd love to play as any of those characters, especially, I'd have to say, the Paladin hero that was unlocked this week. Big fan of him.
Yeah.
Poor George.
Who's the guy he's calling out all the time? Is it Carl. Just a fallen Carl? A fallen comrade?
So the backstory on George and Carl. George and Carl first appeared in Un'Goro. They are the two characters that when you play Lost in the Jungle, if you look in the art, that's George and Carl. And then George and Carl are also an encounter that you can run into in Kobolds and Catacombs. That's the next time that you see them.
Interesting. Dungeon run?
Yeah, when you take one of them down, they kind of tag team, they switch between each other. Do you recall that one?
Vaguely, but it's
been one a while, does yeah. Divine Shields and one does Silver Hand recruit summons. I think it's something like that. But when you take one down enough in life, then the other one then they switch over to the other person, and then you take one out, and then one's remaining. So
his revenge is he's getting revenge on the adventurers from the dungeon run.
Yes, that is exactly what he's doing.
Okay, no, I'm sold now.
Yep.
Hmm. Well, thanks for
I mean,
that.
We may find out that George is actually the mastermind behind this all, and George may be maybe George will overthrow Rafam later on in the year. Who knows?
He's conniving enough to do it.
Yes. And he can cheat well enough to do it.
Yes, he can. We'll get to that. Let's save that for a
bit. Yep.
Because that's a good gem. That's my favorite treasure.
Is
Sound the Bells. Anyway. Yeah, I do have a quick deck, though. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because, again, yeah, I do want this to be a Dalaran heist-themed episode. But I have to mention it, Brian, because as I mentioned to you briefly before the show, it's just your kind of deck.
But it's good.
It's also, yeah, really good. which is not to say that your kind of deck is not good.
I own up to the fact that my decks are pretty suboptimal when it comes to like trying to be competitive with them. But you got to tell me about this one.
Okay, so this one is one that I came across when I was just kind of like cruising around looking for decks post buffs, after we've got the mech event going on and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And obviously one of the things that people started talking about early on was just the whole Pogo Hopper change.
Oh my gosh.
So this is a deck actually by the pro player Casey, if you're familiar with him.
Can't say that I am.
Yeah, he's one of the ones that's continually gotten pretty far, but has never, I don't know if he's gotten to the world stage or not.
Okay.
I feel like I should know this. Regardless, so it's pretty straightforward as a deck goes. I mean, it does pretty much what you would want a Pogo Hopper deck to do. Mm-hmm. It just does it so much better now because of the reduced cost of Pogo Hopper, right? So, like, it starts off with just your zero-cost rogue stuff, backstab, prep, shadow step. It does have two copies of Daring Escape, which is that card where, from this set, return all the friendly minions to your hand. Because, again, you're just trying to play a Pogo Hopper and bring it back and play another one.
Well, sometimes you can Daring Escape a Pogo Hopper, and I imagine like an Evil Miscreant or an SI7 agent, if that's in the deck.
Yeah, Miscreant is, I don't have SI on this one. And Miscreant's obviously just there to give you so much more gas and keep the stuff going.
Yeah.
I've found as well, just a tip on the Evil Miscreant, I played the mirror in this where I was playing against someone who was doing the same deck. So clearly it's getting around.
Yeah.
He beat me because he was just able to get the rushing lackey. I don't know the name off the top of my head, the one that gives it rush and +2 attack. And they just like kind of outvalued me and were killing off my Pogo Hoppers with theirs. But anyway.
Have you seen the variant that's running Magic Flying Carpet in it? Because those Pogo Hoppers are 1/1 when they hit the board. So when they hit the board, the Magic Carpet gives them rush and +1 attack, and then they get their Battle Cry bonus. Oh, wow. Yeah, so they can...
no matter how big they grow.
Yeah, no matter how big they are, they can land on the board, and then they can get trades and still be a threat later.
Well, maybe we're doing that after this. but yeah, so, okay. That's a good inclusion. Hadn't come across that or thought of it. But, I mean, the rest of it is just, again, kind of what you'd expect. It's got... things like, Vanish is at the top end. Witchwood Piper, which also just draws the Pogo Hoppers back 100%. And you got all the stuff to bounce Pogos back in. You know, you've got stuff like the Lab Recruiters, which does that. Two copies of Togwaggle Scheme, which does the same. Even better, of course. But the reason I think you'd like this, Brian, and just generally this archetype, is this deck does actually run Tack Nozwhisker. So, I mean, you get all that stuff going and attack down and, I mean, it's so cheap now to have like a Pogo that comes down, a Togwaggle Scheme you've been holding on to for a while, and Tack Nozwhisker. That's a turn 9 play.
Yeah.
And you got a handful of Pogos, you drop them all, and in the end, like, the game just finishes up because it feels a lot like those old school Jade Druid games. Mm-hmm. In that, like, sometimes you just get to the end and, you know, you've got a 12-12, a 14-14, and a 16-16 on the board, and the Control Warrior. Okay, he brawls it away, but
you can only really brawl so many times. Lives.
Yeah, right. So
same,
just drop three more.
Yeah, I mean, like Warlock and Warrior, they could probably deal with it the best, but once those board clears are gone, you just keep on refreshing with more bigger and bigger men, or bigger in this case, bigger and bigger robot bunnies, and you'll win.
Yep. And if you play slow against them and like wait on your Togwaggle Scheme and stuff,
bait
you're
it
not
out,
gonna run out of Pogos. You're gonna be just fine. So. Yeah, it's pretty fun. I'd recommend it to anybody. Apart from, like, I guess it has Ziliax, Myra's, and Tack Nozwhisker, but after that, it's all pretty cheap stuff, so.
Yep. Is it running two Vanish, I'm guessing?
Yeah, okay. Two Vanish. Yeah. This one does have Van Cleef as well, but
yeah.
I would say he's probably optional.
I'd say he's a good alternate threat because, I mean, the way you figure it, if you get... between like Evil Miscreants and Pogo Hoppers and the cheap spells that you have, you can get an early threatening Van Cleef out. And it just, again, I think Van Cleef's purpose in that deck is important in that it baits out removal, whether it's a board clear or just a single target removal.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, even late game, you do so many things in one turn that, yeah, you can put them down pretty easy too. So,
yeah, it's a solid deck. I've toyed with it just a little bit. I haven't tried to do a whole lot of fine tuning myself. The whole carpet synergy is something that Regis Kilbin, YouTuber, he incorporated that into a Pogo deck. So I borrowed the idea from him.
I wonder what he cut for it. He may have cut, but I do also really like Spirit of the Shark is in this too.
That. I
could see those getting cut.
Yeah, though. I don't think those were in his deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
All right. Well, yeah, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of Pogo. And the funny thing about that deck is there are even people in competitive play are starting to kind of whine about it, saying that like it's hard to answer it. And who knows if that nerf to Pogo may be short-lived or not. I think everyone needs to give it a couple more weeks to let the deck breathe, let people figure out, okay, what's the best way to counter this? Is there a way to counter it? And go from there.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Other than that, to sum up the ladder meta right now, I just want to shout out again to Ben Hearthstone at Hearthshare. Did you see his comprehensive meta deck building guide by chance?
I can't say that I have, not yet.
It's a picture. I'll let you go to his thing and see it. Maybe no, I'll shout it out. It's good. It's a picture of every class, and all he's done is put Snip Snap and Ziliax, and then just let it autofill.
Well, yeah, because it's a Hearthstone deck in 2019.
That's all you need,
as Steve from Wicked Good would say, or Steve from Off Curve. Yeah, if it's a Hearthstone deck in 2019, it runs a Snip Snap and a Ziliax, and there you go.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that said, a lot to talk about with the heist, but let's briefly first talk about the return of an old Tavern Brawl with our Brawl Breakdown.
Brawl!
Okay, this week's Brawl Breakdown is Nefarian Rises. Now, we have never talked about this Brawl before because the last time that it came out was about a month before the show first started. Nefarian Rises is a co-op Tavern Brawl, so you and the player across from you are actually working together to take down a boss minion, Nefarian. He has 200 health. He switches sides of the board. At the end of each player's turn, he does something that's really lame and cheating, and whether it's setting up bombs on each person's deck or dealing a whole bunch of damage to each person. Typical kind of co-op brawl stuff. Now, I have a little bit of bias about co-op brawls, and I will say, Kevin, I played this once this week, and I am done with it. I am not a huge fan of most co-op tavern brawls. I'll go into detail about it, but I want to first get have you played the brawl this week, and just kind of like what's your take on it? Are you having fun with it?
Yeah, I mean, I generally have fun with co-op brawls, but I mean, they are a lot more fun when you're playing with a friend, even if it's just someone off your friend's list, because, you know, then you can at least, like, ping each other back a little bit, although the mobile client for whispering could be much better, Hearthstone. Yeah. But other than that, you can kind of, like, think through a few things, and you can say, oh, hey, I've got, you know, big combo coming up here. I'm trying to save up a bunch of stuff for a big, you know, Bloodlust or something like that, and just kind of work it out with them what you're going to be doing. But yeah, I mean, when you're playing with a total stranger, it can be a little awkward because you get a sense of where your I almost said opponent, but partner, where your cohort there is skill wise pretty early on, if they're just starting to do any weird stuff. I'll say at least this one, with the classes that they chose and the decks that they've built for both of these sides, the priest and the shaman, it works out better. There was one that was co-op a while ago. Again, I think they haven't done this since, but it was one that that had a mage who had fireballs, and it was a world in which that enemy mage could just shoot fireballs at your face. And not so great there. These decks are kind of designed to where, like, you really can't do much to fight your opponent or partner,
I mean, and obviously the decks use certain cards that you normally wouldn't play in a normal game of Hearthstone, like cards that give your opponent stuff for playing them because that's the supposed penalty for playing it. But in this case, it's actually a boon, like the arcane golem, the 4/4 that gives your player an extra mana crystal. There's a couple other cards like that where it gives your opponent something. And in this case, your opponent is actually working with you. So that all works out. And
yeah, and this version actually has a couple unique cards to it as well. Things like the main tank, which gives +2 to everything except the boss. And then the raid healer, which has a pretty good body. And then it also makes it to where any healing done to you also heals your friend.
Yeah.
Is that what we should just call them? Friends?
I guess.
Frenemy. Definitely frenemies.
It can be a frenemy situation, especially if you are playing with someone who doesn't have experience with the brawl. If they are playing this brawl for the first time and they've not studied up on it, they've not read up on it, kind of like going in against a raid boss in World of Warcraft, if you don't know how the fight's going to play out, you're going to be at a distinct disadvantage, because when you mouse over Nefarian, it doesn't really tell you everything that's going to happen. So there's a couple things to keep in mind if you've not played this brawl before. And that is, when Nefarian reaches certain life totals, the current player's turn is going to immediately end. He'll be immune. And then Nefarian's going to cast a big spell, which in most cases will kind of reset the board. I think when you get him down to, he starts at 200. When you get him down to, I believe, 150, that's when the first transition happens. And he will do something like 5 to 6 damage to everything on the board.
Right.
And that's not too bad. You can actually get some minions on the board that have a high enough health to survive that and keep going. And then at I want to say 60 health, he once again becomes immune, and he gains 30 health and deals 30 damage to everything on the board.
Yeah, that's 60. You're right there. Yeah. So he ends up being at 90 at the end of right. that sequence.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. One of the strategies, one of the key strategies to winning this brawl, because it's a really, for a co-op brawl, this is a really tough one to win. But one of the key strategies to it is to play, now I think it's, is it the main tank that gets +1/+1 every time a card is played?
No, but, or no, I know the
no there's
you're
Raid Leader. No, oh, Raid Leader, it, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a minion called Raid Leader. And it gets a +1/+1 every time any player plays a card. That Raid Leader is, or I'm maybe I have the name of that wrong because Raid Leader is the plus the 2/2 guy
who gets
+1/+0
yeah.
attack.
Something Raid themed for sure.
There is a minion that gets +1/+1 anytime any player plays a card. That's the minion that you want to kind of carry over into the end game, and you want it to survive that second transition when you bring Nefarian down to 60 health. You want it so that its health is high enough to actually survive that 30 damage clear, and then use that to basically, within a turn or two, finish Nefarian, whether you have your Shaman give it Wind Fury or so on. It's a great strategy when your partner understands that that's what you're supposed to do, but when your partner doesn't know that that's the way that the brawl works, and when your partner doesn't know what Nefarian's going to do at 60 health, Kevin... This brawl can be so frustrating. I just wish there were better ways to signal, better ways to communicate with your partner. Even if you're not using, you know, the friend message system, we've seen that they can change emotes. I kind of wish that if we had a co-op tavern brawl, that they could give each side, even if we're playing our normal classes, if they could give each side custom emotes that say target this or watch out for this or transition coming, something like that. Even if the characters don't have the vocals
right.
to signal that, just having the emotes to temporarily signal, hey, let's do this or stay away from this or target this, that would make it feel a lot more cooperative.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know. I do like the fact that there are phases to the raid boss, and even the fact that you pointed out at the beginning that if you don't know the fight, like in WoW, then you're not prepared to be able to address those phases when they come. So, like, I like all that stuff, but yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I would think the only way you could do anything like that right now would be to come up with a universal language in which we start, like, mousing over certain, you know, cards with a spell. Like, say I got Velen's Chosen mm-hmm. in my hand, and I wanted to tell my partner that, hey, I really want to buff this guy up a lot, the raid healer, because we need heals. Maybe I'd hover over it for a good 5 seconds before casting it so they could get that message. But no, I don't think we can get that kind of thing out there to people. That's
so
the only thing I can think of.
There's kind of a debate to be had over this issue that I have with the co-op brawl, though, because on one hand, I feel that, hey, there are things that you can do to have better communication between the players and to signal like what transitions are and what the transitions are going to do. But the question that kind of be asked is, should these brawls throw that information all out there, or is part of the quote unquote fun of the brawl discovering that transition, failing from it, and then succeeding the next time? So I guess the very first time that I played this brawl a few years back, yeah, the transitions were kind of fun and interesting, and it's like, oh wow, that's something I did not expect. So I suppose for someone playing the brawl the first time, maybe it's okay, but for someone who knows what the brawl is about, it's a little frustrating when, and this brawl in particular, you will very likely go to fatigue. I think that the thing that frustrates me about this brawl, and this is what happened the first time that I played this week, is that we got so close to beating him, but because my partner did not understand that second transition, they didn't prepare for it right, and we lost the board, and Nefarian won.
Sure.
And that was like 20 minutes of time that to me felt wasted.
No, I get it. and it is, I will say for this one though, it seems like just based on the cards and classes that they chose this time around for it, it is pretty well tuned for like what this is. Cause you're right. You pretty much, my lethal was on my fatigue turn. So I had just drawn my last card. But yeah, I mean, it's designed to take you to the end and you almost have to do something broken to finish him off at the end. And for me, it was a good Divine Spirit Inner Fire, as well as I think I had four or five things on my side of the board and a Bloodlust all in one turn, which was a satisfying end to a game that we honestly didn't think we were going to win for a while there.
Oh, yeah. I have no problems against, you know, it's an epic kind of fight. It's an epic brawl. I guess as someone who's had experience with this particular brawl, I kind of wish that there was better ways to kind of communicate what's going on with the brawl. But on the flip side, looking at from the perspective of someone who hasn't played it before, maybe there is some fun to be had in exploring this brawl and not knowing what it's going to do, having it happen, go like, oh, wow, I guess next time I better do this. So I don't know. I'm actually torn on it. There's a part of me that's an angry veteran, and the part of me which understands, hey, for the newcomer, it might not be.
You know, I mean, it's one that, unless you've got more friends that are new and interested in playing, it's definitely one you can just do one and done for the week. Call it good.
Sure.
Partly because it's so long.
Yep. And you'll get you do get just a classic pack for completing this, but hey, classic means at least 40 dust if you've been playing for a while, or you might finally open up that legendary Nat Pagel or King Mukla that you haven't crafted yet.
Because it would be infringing upon your timer, your pity timer on classic packs, and you wouldn't have as great of a chance of getting one in your golden pack. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. That's true. So maybe get the golden classic pack before you finish the brawl. I don't know about that.
Depends on where you're at on your time. If you just got a legendary, finish the brawl. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm at. I need to get that golden pack though before I get any more classic.
Yeah, I don't track my pity timers on legendaries anymore.
I'd like to start, but it's not a big deal. In some time. Maybe I will.
All right, so that's what the brawl's about. Let's move on and touch a quick bit of news before we get into our main topic, and that is there is a new bundle out, and with the new bundle, there is a new Shaman Hero to be had.
That is right. So, I've got kind of mixed feelings on this one. I think I may actually end up doing it just because I love the heroes, but I'm kind of concerned that, again, this is another bundle that comes with a Shaman Hero. I mean, I already am rocking King Rastakhan. I like him well enough. But of course, the new hero is Lei Shen, the Thunder King. It's just known as Thunder King in this game. But I haven't fully checked into him yet. I want to watch the emotes and everything. Have you seen him in play much or watched anything about it?
I can't say that I have yet. I feel that I'm going to end up getting Lei Shen because he's part of a 20-pack bundle, right? It's 10 Rumble packs and 10 Rise of Shadow packs and the hero and a card back all for $20. That's not a bad deal. I mean, a dollar per pack is usually the kind of value you're getting for like pre-release packages. So it's not a bad offer to get the hero thrown in on the side, I think, is the extra bit of grease that they need to talk people into getting it that may have pretty much all that they need. So at the very worst, you have a whole bunch of dust.
This is the most like Sir Anoyo, if you recall, the Anoyotron Paladin hero. I just want to know if he does because in the raid Throne of Thunder, his voice lines were all so crazy over the top. I just want to know if he does his line where he's just like, I am the Thunder King. They really drag it out there.
I don't know. I'm sure there's a couple of like YouTube videos out there that like, like all of Lei Shen's emotes. I'm sure those videos exist.
I'll check that out first, but I'm still probably.
I don't know when this offer expires. I'm likely going to pick it up myself again. 20 packs for. Yeah, it's not. It doesn't go on forever because the whole point of this bundle is that it is tied into helping fund the Hearthstone Grandmasters prize pool. The prize pool for the Grandmasters is like $500,000, but every purchase of this bundle will, a portion of it helps boost the prize pool of that to bring it up to $750,000.
What a novel idea. You know, I feel like if only other Blizzard games had tried more things like this. Or
like StarCraft?
Or like
World of Warcraft,
Heroes both of which do? I don't know.
I know you were talking about, I know you meant Heroes of the Storm. Uh-huh. If only all of their games had a thing like that instead of everyone cool, but one.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. And also, there were some quality of life improvements that came with the most recent patch. And you know what? I haven't really read up in detail on these, Kevin. So you might know more about these than I do and whether or not.
I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but they were kind of surprises. The two really big main ones are if you disconnect from a game, it no longer takes you back to the opening screen. You just connect back into your game, which saves you a lot of time and just connects you better and faster. So that's good. And then did you not hear there was offline mode? Because that's a thing.
Oh, yeah. A couple of shows have talked about that, where like if you get disconnected from the Hearthstone server, you can still go through your collection. You can still do a limited number of things. Obviously, you can't play games, but you can go through your collection.
Yeah, so for people that have a commute in a subway, maybe, that drop connection every few minutes as you go under a tunnel or whatever, hey, just stay offline. Collect some stuff, set up a new deck, do your thing, you know? So
when Thist is in the tunnel, she can work on making a new deck.
Sounds good.
All right. All right. Well, that's pretty much it for news. Of course, the Rise of the Mecha event has begun, so do make sure you log in if you haven't already to get your golden snip snap. And, you know, buffs to a number of Boomsday Project cards have happened. People are trying out new decks and stuff. Reckless Experimenter got nerfed just ever so slightly. So we're in a bit of a new meta. People are still kind of discovering things. As we mentioned earlier, everyone's playing with Snip Snap, it seems. And Snip Snap and Zilliax are just the buddy cop show of 2019 Hearthstone.
It's pretty good.
All right. Well, let's move on to our main discussion for today, and that is, of course, the Dalaran heist. Now, again, because the bosses that you encounter are somewhat randomized, I mean, you'll definitely see a few familiar faces in every chapter, but because the order they come in can be a little bit different, and the experience can vary from run to run, trying to give you a boss by boss breakdown.
And we don't want to spoil some things, too. You know, some of you just got to experience.
But yeah. Absolutely. But we do each have some preferred treasures and passive cards that we tend to play in our runs when completing them. Now, of course, there's two different kinds of cards you can get. The passives are cards which just affect your deck for the rest of the run, for the entire run. You don't have to play something from your hand. And then the treasures are like weird, unique spells or minions that can have anywhere from a pretty cool impact on the board to a freaking crazy impact on the board. And when you combine some of those treasures with certain passives, or when you are able to take some of those like treasure minions and make them a little bit better with, say, the Bob the Bartender inside the tavern encounters, things can get really wacky. Kevin, for you, and I think we're going to focus on mostly when it comes to treasures, like the newer treasures, because there's treasures from the older stuff that you'll find in here too, but from the newer treasures that are in the heist, which ones are you finding really
well
for you?
I would have to say, as far as like working really well for me, I think the top one there has to be the candles. Because I've definitely won some runs based on the candles. So basically how this one works, if you haven't encountered it before, it's a twin spell. And that you got all the twin spells in the world on this guy. And basically all it is it's a 3 damage to your opponent's board, just the minions. But again, you get to stack it three times. So it's just a ton of like really flexible board clear. I mean, you feel like you have your card in your hand for a good chunk of the game if you space it out well, and it just ends up doing you some good for sure.
And to kind of clarify on this, because I learned this the hard way, with that card, you don't get all the copies immediately after playing the first one. Basically, you play one, and then you get a copy of it minus one of the twin spell words. So each time you cast it, it loses a twin spell.
But yeah, super versatile. I mean, it's kind of like, as a treasure goes, it's a little basic in that it's not doing anything super crazy, but it's just, it's so much damage for free and ends up just winning you games, frankly. So I'd say, as far as like utility and just general use, that's my favorite one. So.
Well, my favorite one, the MVP of all the newer treasure cards, has to be the Glimmer Patron.
Okay.
In fact, oh yeah, absolutely. The Glimmer Patron has been responsible for 2/3 of my heroic wins.
Interested. I just saw him in my lineup today.
Absolutely insane. So here's the thing about Glimmer Patron. If you are going to choose Glimmer Patron, he'll work well unbuffed. And what he is a 3/3, and at the end of the turn, he makes a copy of himself in whatever form he is. So unlike the Grim Patron, where it took damage to make a copy of him, the Grimmer Patron at the end of your turn just copies himself. So if he's a, when you play him, he's a 3/3, and you end your turn, he will have a 3/3 copy with him. If you play him as a 3/3 and you say give him Wind Fury or give him Divine Shield or something like that, the copy also has Wind Fury or Divine Shield. Whatever you buff a Glimmer Patron with, it's an exact copy that's made at the end of your turn, and that's the important thing. The really good synergy with Glimmer Patron is in decks that take advantage of buffs. Every class, of course, has access to buffs, but in particular, Paladin is great with Glimmer Patron. Druid does really well with Glimmer Patron. But there are some other priests also. But other classes have ways to buff the patron, and there's some treasure cards and passives that will kind of help give the Glimmer Patron a buff. Like, once, if you have Glimmer Patron with a captured flag, then that's going to be a 4/4 that copies itself. And basically the trick is, when you're playing with Glimmer Patron, is to always make sure that you are at least protecting and keeping one on the board. And if you manage to get a wide line of copies of Glimmer Patron, you take the weaker ones that you have, the ones that are about to die, and you run those for trades to take out your opponent's side of the board. That way you're strong, only the strong survive and make copies of themselves. And it's just sick. I had one of my favorite combos was, and I got this in the final chapter of the normal heroic for chapter, not heroic, the final chapter for normal chapter 5, had Glimmer Patron out and was able to give it the Gnomish Army Knife. The Gnomish Army Knife is another treasure, which gives your minion lifesteal, charge, Wind Fury, poisonous, stealth, taunt, everything. You put that on a Glimmer Patron, and now Glimmer Patron is copying itself with a Gnomish Army Knife on it, and it's just insane.
And lifesteal. I'm completely sold. And you also gave us a lesson on Darwinism in the middle of that, when you said that only the strong survive and copy themselves. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Glimmer Patron's I will always, just like I always pick Wondrous Wisdom Ball, I always pick Glimmer Patron. There's almost never another option. I mean, there's a lot of great treasures in the heist, but Glimmer Patron has just done so much for me on heroic runs. He's basically the way I win most of my heroic
runs. Okay, I'm sold. I'm going to try him out for sure, especially with that Gnomish Army Knife. That's insane. But yeah, any kind of buffing. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Paladin is a class that can buff. Is that true? Is that something that they can do?
So I've heard. I mean, they've got this one.
Let's hang off on that. Wait, one second. The bells. We'll cap all this off with that discussion. anyway, back to me real quick. I just want to shout out another one. So generally, what you're trying to do in these runs, and what I think is true in any Hearthstone PvE content, except puzzles, I guess, but is to just do broken things, like do the best you can to just make a huge board swing if you're down, or even if you're up. And then just finish out the game. And one of the ways I like to do that, of course, is a little on the expensive side, but really on the good side. It's definitely with our good buddy, the Dream Grove Ring. So have you messed around with this one much?
Mm-hmm. No, because I always feel like it costs too much. Now, here's the thing about Dream Grove Ring. It costs 9 mana, and I think it's a good treasure to pick if you cross your fingers and hope that Bob gives you a discount on it.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's definitely a good discount, but even at 9, I've found, because what it is discover a legendary minion, summon 5 copies of it. So now, I mean, this is pulling mm-hmm. from the full wild pool. And so, I mean, there's some definite duds in there. Like, you don't want 5 Nat Pagels. Sorry, Pat Nagel. But you can just, I mean, even if you get something halfway decent, like, I had one where the best one was just Toki the Time Tinker, which, okay, whatever. I get 5 5/5s. Great. But it was great. I still won that game. Like, that was enough of a swing that I could. It's still a big board.
It's a big board.
But you can get, obviously, as crazy as you can imagine in the legendary space. My favorite one I've gotten, not necessarily the best per se, but I got one that was all Ronins. And so that was fun because I had mm-hmm. a board I was facing down that I needed to trade a little to get through. And I staggered out the trades to where, like, yeah, I just had a handful of arcane missiles after that. Just cleared out the game that way.
I feel like the dream is to get Deathwing, either form of Deathwing or Mechathune, or get
the
something
rag
like
would
Ragnaros.
Be the dream, actually. Just have just
yeah.
Oh, okay. Wait, I'm just gonna pick this until I get rag. That's my plan now. But yeah, it's just a good like late game swing. And I honestly think, especially when you get to the later bosses and they've got so much more health and so much other stuff, that's kind of what you want to be doing anyway. Yeah. So yeah, big fan.
I would agree with that. It's not in my top 5, but it can have a pretty big impact. Another one that I would go for, and this is kind of for the same reason that you picked the candles, but I prefer to go this way for my board clears, is Elder Tagawag. He is a, I want to say, 3 mana, 4,
no, you're
4.
Right.
Yeah. I may be a little bit off on the stats. Okay. The important thing is he has a battle cry of deal 4 damage to all enemy minions. So he's basically flame strike in a body.
In a good body.
Flame strike in a can. And yes. And he has a death rattle where he gets shuffled into your deck. Now, one thing to note here, this is really good with either the double battle cry passive that you can pick up. It's also, yeah, for 8 damage to the, basically it's a board clear in most cases. It's also good with the double death rattle, which means when it dies, 2 copies will get shuffled
into your deck.
Yeah, that
makes sense to me. I don't find myself picking those very much these days, though. In your runs, are you doing them a lot, though? Are you getting a lot out of battle cries?
I usually find a better choice. Like in my top 5, Tagawag is kind of, I'd say four or 5 in my top 5, but it's one of those, it's really good in, I find that he comes through on like those middle bosses where it feels a little shaky and I don't know if I'm going to have enough to like get through, say, the tree druid, who just puts down board after board, and Tagwag kind of helps me on that. Tagwag, tends to be an MVP on like mid bosses. Isn't really enough of an impact on the later bosses from my experience, but it's not.
It's always good.
It's always solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense to me.
Yeah, I tend to pick Tagwag a lot when I have double battle cry because 8 damage to the whole
that
side
you get
is
several
just
times a game,
insane.
Presumably. And I mean, he
yeah.
if he doesn't mm-hmm. get silenced or anything weird, then you have protection against what am I thinking? What's the word I'm looking for? Fatigue. See, I'm so fatigued, I can't even think of what fatigue is.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So
that's a good point too. Yeah, you will not fatigue as long as Tagwai keeps on dying doesn't get silenced.
All right. Mm-hmm. So another one from me is, so I'm going to go with and this is really like, maybe not the best option, but it's definitely along the fun side. And I feel like if you get it early enough, you can kind of plan your deck around it. And that's Flyby. So Flyby is the one. It's definitely one of the newer ones. You shuffle a Kadoom bot for 5 mana. into your opponent's deck. When drawn, it explodes for 50 damage on their face. So, I mean, if you get this thing pretty early on, the drawback obviously is that you're spending 5 or maybe a reduced cost if Bob helps you out. But regardless, you're having a kind of dead turn to even get this out there. But I had one run. Mm-hmm. Sadly, it was just one of my normals, so nothing special out of it. But once I had the flyby, I started building my deck to just like be kind of a control-y deck. Like I would take more removal stuff than I normally would. I'd take more card draw than I normally would and just kind of like try to stick around. Like I took Cold Light Oracle because I was like, all right, well, I'll draw more things that can help me draw out the game and maybe I'll draw their flyby for them. And it is super satisfying when that thing goes off and kills your opponent or brings it down crazy low because, yeah, it's definitely not the best one. You're leaving yourself up to RNG, but I don't know. I like it. And flavor-wise, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, not in my top 5, but I will say that if you're trying to complete a run and you're in the middle of a run where you feel like your deck just isn't developing well enough, like you're not getting a whole lot of stupid six synergy or combos that are really meshing well together, if flyby pops up, you might as well go for it, because if your deck is looking a bit on the mediocre end, flyby might be the little bit of RNG that you need to get that win that you didn't think that you were going to get. And if you're just playing normal, 50 damage to most normal bosses is going to pretty much take them out in one shot until you get to boss 7 or 8. If you're doing heroic, that's still a large chunk of damage on those latter bosses. All right, next one I want to talk about, and then I think we have a couple picks that we've kind of both shared here, but one that I want to talk about is Dagwick Sticky Toe, and he is a 2/5 for 3. He has stealth, and when he attacks your opponent, you get to steal a card from their hand. So it kind of like the gloves of thieving or whatever like that. There was a previous treasure that would let you take cards from your opponent's hand. Dagwick, as long as he gets through and gets the opponent, you take cards from their hand. Not only is it good because you get to play the stuff that they had, but you're limiting their options as well. And he's an okay card just with that. He really excels if you are playing a deck where you're choosing the Cloak of Invisibility passive. Because if you're going that way, then you're going really on the offensive. And he fits well into that kind of deck because he will always stay stealth. He'll always get through for damage unless your opponent has a taunt. And as long as he's getting through when he's taking cards away from the opponent, you're kind of doing the best defense is a good offense, taking away their options by having.
Imagine if they have a taunt, you just wait, like you just set him there and wait for something else to be put down that can take it out. And yeah, man, I have not played with him at all. I don't even know if I've been offered him yet. So that's a cool, and especially with the stealth, that's really cool. I could see this mechanic being a thing in Constructed. I mean, it couldn't have this body and it couldn't come out with stealth probably, but. You know, like,
I feel like, it'd have to have a weaker body. It should be fairly easy to answer. Like, if you make this a legendary minion in the regular game, I think it'd be something like a 2/2 starts with stealth, you know, something.
You could do 3-mana 2/2 starts with stealth.
Yeah, well, Shaku. It kind of reminds me of Shaku, right? Although Shaku didn't take a card from your opponent's hand, it was basically just do like a burgle a card.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it has to be weaker than him in terms of body and stuff. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's in my top 5 though, because it's just he's in my top 5 if I go Cloak of Invisibility build, basically. If I'm not running Cloak of Invisibility, I'll usually choose something else.
Because you'd probably just get one off maybe, which might make the difference of the game.
It's still a solid card, but it doesn't have the super crazy powerful impact without the cloak.
All right, so let's move on to one that we both agree on for sure. Mm-hmm. And I don't even necessarily think it's the best, but Super Simian Sphere.
Yeah.
Because it's 5 mana, summon King Mukla, but then give it immune and can't be targeted by spell or hero powers. So pretty much flat immune 5/5 that you just have on your board all the time. Obviously, this is your guy that you trade with when you're given the opportunity, because you're not taking damage with him when you're doing that. But I mean, a 5/5 going face to finish off a game doesn't hurt either. Now, do you know, I haven't encountered this specific situation, but what does kill him? Would it be, would Brawl, I imagine, just because it's not a targeted thing?
I have not run into a situation where he's been on the board and I've seen a board clear happen. So I don't know if he's immune to board clears or not.
I assume he'd be immune to board clears that do damage. So like, if it was a, I don't know,
like Dragon's Fury, Breath
or something. Yeah. Something like that. But I mean, for something that just throws out everything except one remaining card, I don't know. So
yeah, he's just, he's a solid body. You'll pretty much always have a 5/5 body on board. And sometimes that's all you need. At the very least, it's kind of like having a passive 5 attack, a 5 damage attack every turn. And I'm wondering of ways to like possibly abuse this. And I'm wondering, could you do Defender of Argus and give him taunt?
Ooh, I don't know.
Would it affect him? I need to try this now for science.
Maybe.
Because if you Defender of Argus, if you Defender of Argus next to him, then he becomes immune, has taunt. That should mean you win, right?
Yeah, Defender or the cheaper one. But yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Are we even offered those much in these runs, though? I have not seen
I got offered Defender a bit on my Paladin run today.
Okay. No, that's an interesting take, because all they would have is reach over that unending, infinite, invincible taunt.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, something to consider.
You know, it's the kind of thing where, like, when you say that, I think, oh, yeah, there's no way that works. But then I remember Sound the Bells, and I'm like, yeah, okay, maybe there's a way that works. I don't know.
Yep.
If that does work, it's the second most broken thing you can do in this mode.
Possibly. Another broken thing would be the last treasure that we're talking about, one that you and I both agree on, and that is the good old banana split. And all I can say is I mentioned this at the top of talking about the treasures, and I'll mention it again. Grimmer Patron, ladies and gentlemen, with banana split, it's just the best. You play your Grimmer Patron on turn 5. If you have both of these treasures, on turn 5, you drop the patron, you play Banana Split. What the Banana Split does is it gives a minion +2/+2, and then after the +2/+2, it summons 2 copies of it. So imagine with Grimmer Patron on turn 5, you are getting 3 5/5s. That then at the end of your turn are each summoning a copy of itself. So on turn 5, you have a board of 6 5/5s, which is basically your Dreamgrove Ring Toki, but better.
Yeah, I was about to say. And then they keep copying and doing their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
I usually Banana Split Lich King, though. That seems to be my favorite target for Banana Split.
My favorite target is Chargers. So I had a friend of mine recommend. He said he just totally dominated a game with Leroy and Banana Split.
Ooh.
But I haven't had that, but I did have a run where it was Sky Captain Crag and Banana Split.
Okay.
Same kind of idea. I mean, it was a little more expensive, but yeah, you're charging with 8/8s, 3 of them. And I mean, Leroy becomes 8/4, which isn't even necessarily easy to remove every time. So, I mean, you just get this huge, fairly cheap burst out from that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, anything that has an immediate onboard impact that isn't a battle cry makes sense. That's why I'd like your Lich King, and obviously your Grimmer Patron makes sense here as well. But yeah, in general, like, I kind of like, when I think about Banana Split 2 and what happened in some of my runs that I had with it, is that I wouldn't have the dream set up. Like, you just wouldn't have those cards in your hand.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like Conjurer's Calling in the same sense, and we talked about this on this show previously, but if you have a decent 3 drop out and you get to a turn that's otherwise pretty dead, but you know you could get way ahead if you just Banana Split it, whatever, if you just have, you know, on turn 4, maybe 3 5/5s on your board, and that just snowballs you to win the game.
Yeah.
That's a fine use of this thing, you know? So
there is another thing to consider when running. If you pick Banana Split and you have, and you get it before you go into a tavern, if you end up in a tavern and one of your options is the option where you can look at 4 spells and reduce the cost by 4, I would strongly suggest doing that. And because these decks don't tend to be spell heavy, you don't get too many spells as options. If you choose Banana Split, go into the tavern, play that card to let you look at four spells and reduce the cost by four. Odds are you're going to get the Banana Split to come up. You reduce Banana Split to zero, and now you're looking at a situation where if you have a turn one drop or a turn two drop on your run, you're playing a zero cost Banana Split. You're setting up a really aggressive early board that way too.
Yeah. I would think that was aggressive if it wasn't for using that same thing you were talking about, the upper hand in Bartender Bob on another card we've hinted at a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, moving on to passives though. So obviously, like, to me, the treasures are one thing. They're fun and flavorful, and I like that it just adds something to your run. Generally speaking, I'd say too, if you've got some really good treasures, there's some wisdom in even just mulliganing for them because of how broken they are. Like Super Simeon's Fear, you normally wouldn't mulligan for something that costs five mana, but just do it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just that good. Passives, obviously, are a whole different ballgame. And I want to start off with one of my favorites that I know as soon as I put it in the show notes, we were sitting here prepping for the show and you went, really? and I get why you're confused, but here's the thing. Let me make a case for Togwaggle's Dice. So
you go ahead and do that.
Togwaggle's Dice. There is one problem with it, and I'll get to that, but it is the only problem. Okay. It is a passive. At the end of your turn, randomize the cost of all cards in your hand. So basically you're playing Randomonium and yep. your opponent is not, is yep. how you want to think of this. The one drawback is I got it in a run once and I very unintelligently selected it when I already had Burning Wit Mage. And if you reduce the cost of something with Burning Wit, which is, of course, the mage hero power, one mana, reduce the cost of a card by two, when the dice rolls next turn, it goes away. So
yeah,
not the greatest. I mean, you can still get some value out of it, but not as much as you normally would. So I'll caution against that. But otherwise, I'm just a big fan. So here's the deal. You get to randomize the cost of everything. And then, like a few of these passives, one of them being the, I don't know the name of it, but it was one from the Dungeon Run days where if you have any minions that cost more than five, they cost five.
Scepter of Summoning.
Mm-hmm. So that's another example of something that just impacts cost greatly. And Togwaggle's Dice can really impact cost greatly. So, I mean, you're at the whims of RNG, yes. But you can also do things like the game where I had gotten Alexstrasza, because generally speaking, if you do the Scepter of Summoning or Togwaggle's Dice, just start building your deck with crazy expensive things. Or obviously the robes as well, which we haven't even talked about because it's just kind of like exempted
from. Yeah, I was going to say, we made an executive decision that when we talk about this stuff, we're not talking too much about Robes of Gaudiness, because pretty much you pick Robes of Gaudiness if you see it.
It's the best in slot robe.
It is sure. best in That's, slot.
That is the one where your cards cost half, but you can only play two cards each turn.
Yeah.
And that last part is fine. Just pick the most expensive stuff you can pick when you get your buckets and you'll be all right. You'll be all right. But I'm saying you can do that with Togwaggle's Dice too, although to a much lesser degree. But if you do, you can do things like, I was on a pretty late boss. I don't know exactly how deep it is, but the boss definitely had 80 health. And I got a just not ordinarily the greatest mulligan, but I had Alexstrasza in my mulligan and it randomed over to where on turn two, it cost one. So, I mean, I did not great at math, but what's 80 minus 15? That's the damage I did on turn two.
Yeah.
And I used to think that was crazy until you sound the bells. But anyway, so I don't know. Yes, you're giving yourself over to the RNGesus, if you will, but it can be fun.
So when Togwaggle's Dice is good, it is very, very good. When Togwaggle's Dice is bad, you lose your run. that's my thing about it. I have chosen the dice in the entire history of the heist. I have chosen these dice three times. Every single time I've chosen the dice, I have lost the run because RNG gave me high mana costs for the cards, and I just lose because I can't play anything.
Well, you can still play. So how it works, too, is that as you draw the card, naturally this happens at the end of your turn. So, I mean, at the very least, you could just play your deck normally with whatever you top decked. So there's that as like kind of a fallback. But yeah, I mean, I hear you.
It's a gamble. If you like the gamble and if you like Randomonium, which, I mean, apparently has been mentioned is the most popular Tavern Brawl format in Hearthstone, don't you know? That's why it's come up so many times. And we do love Randomonium. And you know what, Kevin? I just realized that. For all the hatred that you and I have about the Randomonium Tavern Brawl format, here you are picking Togwaggle's dice.
Sure am. Yep. I will defend it in this format. For sure.
That's funny. Well, I do like mana manipulation. For me, one of my favorite passives is, and this is one that I think both Kevin and I agree on, is Emerald Goggles. Now, these reduce the mana cost of the leftmost card in your hand by 2 mana. And if you are running a deck that has, for the most part, low-cost cards, or say, you know, going up to maybe 5 mana, that Goggles can give you you can just flood the board early on in the game. I mean, we were talking about doing things like, you know, turn one play with a zero cost banana split and getting some early aggression on the board. The Goggles kind of let you do that too. They let you play an unusual number of cards in the first couple of turns of the game that you normally would have to take a few turns to do, provided you don't end up with a high mana cost card toward the left side. So if your deck is running something like a Ysera or a Lich King, and during the mulligan phase, you know, you get a Lich King in your leftmost card, you mulligan it away, and then the Ysera comes in, and the Ysera is your leftmost card, you're going to be kind of blocked there. So the trick is, if you're going to choose Emerald Goggles, is keep the cost of your cards in mind. Now, Goggles combined with Robes of Gaudiness, of course, makes that problem not an issue. Goggles combined with Togwaggle's Dice also can probably help toward that end. But if you're running just Goggles, do keep the costs of the stuff in your deck in mind. I would say try to stay away from anything that is more than 6 mana. And basically, the whole point of the deck is to get early aggression on the board and to just not give your opponent time to react, essentially.
I feel like Gaudy Goggles is probably just a one run. Like, you have already won.
Just about, yeah.
Pretty close, yeah. I haven't had that combination yet, but it totally
Well, you still sense. Only get to play 2 things a turn, but the fact that, I mean, something that costs 10 mana or 9 or 10 mana gets reduced to 5, and then if it's the leftmost card in your hand, gets reduced again to 2 mana. Basically, everything that was 10 gets reduced to 5, then gets reduced to 2. So, yeah, you're doing great.
You could play any of that stuff on turn 2, like Ragnaros or anybody, yeah. So, yeah, seems good. I will say also that Emerald Goggles is really good if you, as we kind of hinted at the last time we talked about all this stuff, if you've set it up through Bob that you've got a buffed low-cost minion, so we're thinking 3 or less, but definitely 2 or less, that always starts in your opening hand. Because when it starts in your opening hand, it's always the leftmost. So you can just spit out a 0-cost 4-3 or 3-5, or I don't know how you've buffed it, but something crazy, and just start the snowball from there, and then keep it going.
Yeah, I mean,
I will say, too, go ahead.
I was going to just say really quick, as much as we're talking about like treasures and passives and the way the treasures and passives kind of work together, it should not be understated that Bob can have just as much an impact if you choose the right things and you get the right cards to go with Bob's bonuses.
Yeah, like if you choose to reduce the cost of Sound the Bells. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. So. I'm a big fan. And you know what? I will say I'm totally with you in that, you know, if you get a high cost minion on the left side with the goggles out, it does gum you up a little bit. But I mean, you know, playing a 7 mana Ysera isn't bad either. So
no,
it's just generally good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to lose the game if you have a high cost card as a leftmost card in your hand. It just means you can't maximize the use of the goggles. Right. So when I get goggles, I try to go for kind of a mid range deck. So the highest thing I'll have in my deck is usually 6 or 7 mana. But there's nothing saying that you can't try it with high cost cards, because it's you're still going to benefit. You just may not have the goggles for a little while, but that's when you fall back on other bonuses and other treasures that you get in the run.
Makes sense to me. All right. Moving on, I'm going to discuss one that we also both agree on yet again in terms of some of our high picks. It is the Rocket Backpacks. So I definitely agree with Dr. Boom when he calls out that that's the one to choose, because this is the one where, and this is actually the first passive I ever picked on my very first normal run. And I was just kind of like, what? I hadn't researched any of these. It's a passive where, of course, your minions have rush. So what this does is it honestly makes it to where, like, every card you have is potentially removal, or, you know, maybe just card draw.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you can start thinking of your minions as just spells that, like, can run in. I mean, if you just play a 3-mana 3/3, nothing else, I mean, it's got rush, so you just put it down and rush it in. It's decent removal. And that obviously stages up even more and more as you start playing bigger and bigger minions. Obviously, this one synchronizes, of course, well with anything that's reducing the cost of stuff, because then you're getting big stuff out and being able to rush it, too. The one real drawback to this is just flat out forgetting to rush. I don't know if you've ever done that, but it's definitely...
That green fiery aura around it usually reminds
me. Usually, but I sometimes play on the move, you know, doing laundry and random stuff, and I definitely lost a run the last night because I forgot that I needed to rush and just to get some value trades in, whatever. But just super good. I mean, obviously it's not doing anything broken in terms of like mana cost or giving you extra stats or anything like that. But
but it can, Kevin. If you have the right passive to go with it. So one thing I want to say about Rocket Backpacks is, if you decide to go with anomaly mode where you get like the random effect that, you know, influences both sides, or if you get the death rattle totem, Rocket Backpacks and death rattle synergy is freaking amazing.
Ooh,
especially if you end up having, if you have double death rattles, then even choosing a harvest golem, an unassuming 3-mana harvest golem, if you have double death rattle and you have rush with rocket backpacks, you're sending it at something for 2 damage. Then you get 2/2 ones on the board. Each of those have rush. That 3-mana mech all of a sudden is 6 points of rushing damage.
Yeah.
So, rocket backpacks and death rattle just in general is really good synergy because, like you said, having minions with rush is kind of like treating them like spells. And one of the things about death rattle is they're like spell effects built into your creatures, but the thing is they need to die. One of the drawbacks about death rattle is you usually have to wait a turn to get into a situation where they die, or usually when you want to make use of death rattle, you're trying to make it happen on your terms, and sometimes it doesn't always happen on your terms. With these minions having rush, you can kind of define those terms.
Yeah, and I would say, too, another thing that you can help yourself through is, honestly, just use the rush almost as liberally as you feel like you can. And by that, I mean, so say you drop an 8-8 on the board, and on the opponent's side, there's a 1-1. Just take out the 1-1. Whatever. I mean, yeah, you've got an 8-7. I don't know what you were saving that health for. Just make use of it. And to be clear as well, so the card reads, your minions have rush. And by that we mean it's kind of like the Cloak of Invisibility in that, you know, it's not saying the minions you play have rush. It's any minion on your side of the board, which, of course, is where you get your Harvest Golem example. But, isn't Harvest Golem, though, just a Kmart snip snap at this point?
But, you know, you get Harvest Golems in the heist more often than you get snip snap offered.
Do you even get snip snap offered? Because he came out after.
You don't get it offered, but you can still get it if you play the right kind of cards, such as if you go with like death rattle packages in your heist run. I always suggest going for that, and I'm going to forget the name, but there's a 3-run with a death rattle of add a death rattle minion to your hand.
Oh, yeah.
The Gravedigger girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, Shallow Gravedigger, is that it? Or something like that. That can get you Snip Snap. I've already had that happen to me today.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
Yep.
All right, cool. Do we just have one more to discuss?
I think we covered everything. I would just say to kind of wrap it up is that, again, we kind of focused on the newer stuff that's in terms of treasures and passive that came with the heist. But that being said, there are, you know, passives and treasures that have been around from before with earlier dungeon runs and mechanics that you should definitely consider using as well. Things like Scepter of Summoning, which was brought up, that, you know, reduces the cost of larger things down to 5 mana. That can be great. I would also say the Captured Flag, which may not seem like a big deal, giving all your minions +1/+1, but again, used in combinations and used in a strategy where you're trying to build a deck that's like, does that really kind of early aggression, can make a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, that one's always sneaky good. I say if you get a pick where it's like that and then like, I don't know, Elixir of Vial and Elixir of Vigor, just pick the Captured Flag for sure.
Yep. Also, Elixir of, I think...
Vim?
I may be wrong. Vim is the card draw one. Fun. I stay away from that. Vigor is the one that puts one mana copies in your deck after you play something. Yeah. That one is really good, especially if you build your deck around like mid to high cost things and you're playing with that passive. That works really well. That's a kind of a new one though. But as far as old passives that are good, I always love Double Death Rattle and Double Battlecry. I love +1/+1 to all minions. I love your minions cost one less.
Yeah.
All of those are still solid choices. The new flashy stuff is great, but those other things can help form a solid foundation for your strategy later on.
Cloak of Invisibility we talked about as well.
Yeah.
We are saying all of this as well this entire time without having mentioned the most correct choice, which is Wondrous Wisdom Ball.
Well, that's a given, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean,
that's an absolute given. I mean, we did forget that, but I guess the reason why I forgot it is because rule number one, just like Fight Club is, don't talk about Fight Club. Rule number one of Dalaran Heist is always choose Wondrous Wisdom Ball.
Yeah, that's just no brainer.
Yeah, and since we didn't really talk much last episode about it, I will go into a little more detail and say if you haven't picked the Wisdom Ball yet and you're wondering just why the heck are we talking about it, essentially, Wondrous Wisdom Ball up to 2 times during your turn or your opponent's turn can end up causing a number of different random effects happening. And there's about a dozen and a half possible effects that can happen. Anything from giving you an extra turn to giving yourself an ice block when your opponent attacks you, casting Frost Nova, drawing extra cards, getting a whole bunch of copies of cards. One that I just discovered the other day that I didn't know was even a thing was if you play all the cards in your hand during your turn and you have an empty hand, there is a chance that the Wisdom Ball will just give you a whole bunch of new cards.
Oh, yeah. I've had that one. And another weird one, you know how some of the later bosses start with more mana? Yep. You'll just come up and be like, that guy has more mana. You should start with that too. And then you just start the game with 3 mana or whatever.
So. Yeah. And that one's actually really good for those later bosses too, because I think one of the challenges with those harder bosses at the end is just being behind on mana.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, Wisdom Ball's great.
And hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it didn't do anything good but just said funny voice lines, again, I'd probably still pick it.
I wonder if there's a special interaction for taking Wisdom Ball into the final boss of Chapter 5, and I'm not going to reveal what that is, but if you think about it, you probably can figure out who the final boss of Chapter 5 is.
Yeah, I could probably guess, but
yeah.
I'll get there. I'll get there soon, because I've got a broken final combo.
You do, and that broken combo can work against that final boss. The final boss of Chapter 5, let me just say this. It's hard. If you do not have something really broken and really cheaty, don't feel too bad if even on the normal run you lose to that boss, because it has a really impressive hero power.
Okay, I'm interested. I'm glad we're not spoiling it for folks, though, even if we both have gotten there.
Oh, no, I'm not going to spoil it.
But I am going to spoil this, because it is the most broken thing ever. So we've hinted at it, I don't know, 20 times. It's if you go through as a paladin, which is the new class that just came out today, and the base deck has Sound the Bells just in it. It's one of your very few spells that you can have. like you said, I mean, generally these runs are more minion focused. So when you take at Bob the upper hand, which is a one cost, I mean, it doesn't matter the cost on that one, but it's the one where you look at four spells from your deck, reduce the cost of one by three for this turn. It takes Sound the Bells down from 2 to 0, and then those echoes also count for 0. So I didn't know this until I saw again Ben Hearthstone tweet it out, and then I even tweeted back. I was like, do the echoes really cost 0? And yep, sure can. So I am in the middle of my run right now on Boss 9 where I've got this. And in that time, I had a moment where I lost the board. And so then I just decided, well, you know what? We're going to put down an Annoyatron and then just a 1-1. And then we're going to make the Annoyatron a 40-80 and the Silverhand Knight a 75-149, right?
Yeah.
Another game happened where, if you didn't see me tweet out about this, if you don't follow me, turn two, I just had it in my hand. So, you know, I had the Selfless Defender, I think is the name. The little Argus girl.
Yeah.
And you know, just put her down turn one, and then turn two, buffed her up to 80, which was enough to kill Nazari the dragon at 80 health. So turn two lethal. You know, it just seems like the optimal way to play that deck would just be mulligan everything and hope that you get the bells, because I say, from my very limited experience of it, of just the past few games, well, I will say one thing. It is kind of boring because to get a 2-1 up to 80 attack, you do have to do it, again, not great at math, but is that like 78 times?
It takes a minute. So, it takes more than a minute, actually.
And if you're doing it on your phone, by the end, your screen is just filthy and you're just like, you got to get a Band-Aid for the tip of your finger. But it's worth it because then you know, kill a boss.
If you want to win, if your main goal is just to complete the normal Dalaran heist and get that Golden Classic pack, and then I don't fault you if that's your primary goal with it, then going Paladin's probably the way to go. That's how I finished. I finished with Paladin. I didn't do it via ringing the bells. I did it with Grimmer Patron and Insane Buffs. But sure. I feel like Paladin was intentionally left to the final week because the devs saw the potential for a lot more broken possibilities like Sound the Bells and other stuff too.
Yeah, for sure. So I feel like if I go back with Paladin to try to clear out the other wings, it's also going to be the easiest route through those. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely going to do that as well, because I still need to just flat clear, you know, some of those wings back there. So
yep.
In Heroic anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah,
pretty exciting stuff. Definitely recommend that.
Yeah, I will, the next time I play Paladin in my Heroic runs, I will try to do the infinite Sound the Bells thing, because it sounds great.
And you said, we talked about it before the show a little, you said it was intended, right? Where'd you come across that?
Well, intended in terms of, like, it's not a bug. The thing is, I ran into something similar, because I ran into that with Hagatha's, the Hagatha treasure that turns all your minions into legendary minions and is repeatable. Mm-hmm. I discovered that repeatability because I reduced that with the upper hand to 0. And so the trick with that, if you reduce the Hagatha spell to 0, is you turn your minions into legendaries. If you don't find any legendaries with charge, you cast it again, and you just keep on casting until you get minions with charge, you attack with the charges, recast it, so on and so forth. And that's, again, that takes a long time, but that's pretty much an instant win too.
I hadn't even heard of that one, so yeah.
And you can do that in any class, as long as you get Hagatha's, I forget the full name of the treasure spell, but you get that spell and you reduce it with the upper hand, that will win you pretty much any Heroic run.
I'll look it up, I'm curious. It was one of the just treasure spells?
Mm-hmm.
Agatha something. Do. This is good audio content. Let's just talk about. It's just random.
Scrolling through the page.
You say something while I find this. Just talk about Hearthstone.
I will probably find it before you do. It is
Swamp Queen's Call.
Swamp Queen's Call. That's why, because we're looking for Hagatha. But yeah, Swamp Queen's Call. Play the upper hand on it. Reduce it to 0. And then you can just infinitely turn your minions into different versions of legendaries. And you use them with charge to get all the damage that you need done.
Now, that one, I would say it's probably at least smarter to play it on a slightly wider board so you have more chances to get, because I would think just having one out and hoping for Leroy after Leroy would take forever. Mm-hmm. So I would still say the Sound the Bells is, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But that's something. That's something. I wonder if there's going to be someone out there that does the Sound the Bells but deliberately tries to go for the craziest number he can and spends like a week on it.
This sounds like a disguised toast thing to me.
that would wreck his stream forever.
Yep. Yep.
his viewers would tune in at first, but I feel like you've got to drop off eventually.
Resident sleeper, man. That'll be the most resident sleeper of all disguised toast streams. It may be happening tonight.
Did I ever tell you the story about when I got Godzilla's attack over a billion?
Yes, you did. I think I saw the screenshot of it too.
Oh yeah, my old Hearthstone blog. Mm-hmm. Like 3 years ago. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, we have talked quite a bit about the Dalaran heist. I think we're going to wrap it up for now. There might be a little bit more to talk about it next episode with just a few extra experiences. I think maybe we'll use our next episode to talk a little bit about Bob and just which ones tend to be the best things that Bob has to offer when they come up, and when to play certain cards over others in the tavern. That's about the last aspect of Tavern Brawl of the heist that we haven't gone into too much detail.
That and like spoilers about the boss mm-hmm. content. So I think next time there will just have been enough time that if
spoiler
passed,
warning will be done.
We could give us, yeah, we could give a warning. Yeah. But then, yeah, I think next time we go deep into what it's like to clear wing 5 on heroic and tips on yep. that kind of thing. So yeah, for sure.
Sounds good. Well, until then, Kevin, where can people find you on the internets?
Well, you can find me on Twitter is the main place, at Multizord. You can also find me in a couple different Discords floating around all over the place. I am, of course, playing actually quite a bit more WoW with my buddies when I could squeeze mm-hmm. in time. Like a lot of the Zords have come cool. back for that because we're all just kind of on that classic hype train.
So. You're all playing classic right now on the beta?
No, oh, okay. None of us are in that. I'm not that cool.
But you're ready for it, is what you're saying.
I'm mentally prepared, gotcha. Yeah. I'm restudying what all of the acronyms of all the dungeons are. I think I pretty much got them. Okay.
Awesome. Well,
Dead Minds is VC for the yep. record.
You can find me on Twitter at Rowow. That's Rhowow. I do a couple other shows. Realm Maintenance, if you are into all the podcasts out there about all the other Blizzard games. Rolling Restart, if you're in the World of Warcraft. And if you want to support either of those shows or this one, you can go to patreon.com/realmpodcast to show your support with $1 or $2. Or you can always show your support by just leaving us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, because it's not called iTunes anymore. It just reviews on any of those other platforms, any major podcast app where you can hear this show. You can also send your feedback to hearthcasual@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at hearthcasual.
And you should.
You absolutely should. All right, that'll do it for episode 33 of the show. I think nothing official yet, but I believe we're going to try to also get a guest on in the next episode or two. So keep an eye and an ear out for that. Oh, yeah. We've been talking a little bit about that, and I'm excited about who we may be having on in the near future.
We'll see how it goes, for sure.
We will. Until then, for Kevin Ellis, this is Brian Black reminding you, always Wondrous Wisdom Ball. I mean, I know I said it last episode, but I'm going to say it again. Always Wondrous Wisdom Ball. Goodbye, everybody.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter at Frozen Fox Media. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.